911, what's your emergency?
I've got a gentleman in quarantine with a gun. I need someone here right now. I'm the store manager. Now.
Okay, where is he in the store, sir?
In the sporting goods. Now.
If you've ever picked up the phone to call 911, chances are, in that moment, you or someone else needed help.
Okay, hang on. Do not hang up the phone with me, okay?
And you probably assumed that after dialing those three numbers, help would come screeching around the corner, lights and sirens blaring.
Macomb unit, shots fired.
Well, some people say that depends on where you live.
When I called, no one showed up.
Shootings be going on in Oakland, and they don't respond as fast as they should.
I wouldn't feel comfortable calling 911. I wouldn't unless it was like I was dying.
Those are residents of East and West Oakland.
Urban communities of color where there is a lot of murders and police brutality and discrimination.
The paramedics say that, you know, they don't get a call based on anybody's color, which is true. They get a call based on a neighborhood, and they know certain neighborhoods are black neighborhoods or brown neighborhoods, people of color neighborhoods.
When these two women became convinced that 911 was just not responding fast enough to their neighborhood, they decided to do something about it. They created the People's Community Medics.
We came together and formed a plan to cushion in between the medics getting there and the time of the incident.
What led these women and these residents to lose faith in 911? Over the next hour, we will answer that question as we trace the path of a 911 call in Oakland. From the dispatchers...
911 emergency, where are you reporting?
...to the emergency responders.
I could care less skin color, where they live, what their cultural teachings are. I want to help them out. I want to make sure they get to the care they need.
And we'll see how that all figures into a crisis that has been brewing in Oakland for decades.
When two women come out in the street in Oakland and say, we need to form an organization to address our problems, then they're speaking back 40 years of neglect, 40 years of misunderstanding.
We're dying. We're dropping like flies. This is an emergency. This is something that should be broadcasted all around the world.
I'm your host, Martina Castro, and this is The Race to an Emergency, a documentary by KALW in San Francisco. Stay with us.
You are listening to Making Contact. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Over the next 2 weeks, we're going to bring you KALW Radio's year-long investigation into just what happens when you call 911 and why some people feel the emergency response system is failing them. The show takes place in Oakland, California, but that mistrust in the system is an issue in communities across the country. Let's get back to part one of The Race to an Emergency, hosted by Martina Castro.
We start off in West Oakland at a pirate radio station. The founders of the People's Community Medics have a weekly show, and they talk openly about the issues they have with 911 and what they're doing about it. Reporter Ali Butner has more.
We're gonna fade in just a minute. This is mic one.
The tiny room is covered with posters and stickers, stacks of CDs and twisted up cables. Leslie Phillips is at the mic.
Welcome to the People's Community Medics on Berkeley Liberation Radio. And this is your hood first lady and Sister T reporting.
Leslie comes off as grounded and warm. Her radio name, First Lady, fits her. She flashes a wide smile as she passes the mic to Sister T, her friend and co-host, Sharina Thomas.
I want to give a shout out to my son, Dante. He's out there playing football for the Dynamites.
Sharina is a mother of four, and while Leslie is steadfast, Sharina's fiery. They play off of each other every Saturday during their show, where they mix music with talk about racism and police repression. Their theme song kind of sets the tone. "911 is a joke." The song is from Public Enemy's 1990 hit album, Fear of a Black Planet. it criticizes 911 responders for always being late to calls from black neighborhoods. They only come and they come when they wanna. So get the more truck and then bomb the corner. I met Leslie and Sharina at a community picnic where they explained why they chose this song.
You know, it's been like 20 years since Public Enemy wrote a song called 911 is a joke. And it's still true to this day that they don't often come at the time that they should come, you know, and they don't often provide the kind of care that they should provide.
That's why in 2011, Leslie and Sharina founded the People's Community Medics. Their goal was to train their neighbors in basic first aid so that when there was an emergency, they could do something to keep people alive as they waited for help.
We came together and formed a plan to cushion in between the medics getting there and the time of the incident.
Leslie and Sharina say 911 is slow in responding to all kinds of emergencies in their neighborhoods, so their trainings include how to deal with things like seizures. But their main concern is for victims of violence. In 2012, there were 131 murders in Oakland, and most of them happened in the neighborhoods where Leslie and Sharina live. The statistics show that a disproportionate percentage of the victims were black. So this is not just a geographic or class issue for Leslie and Sharina. It's inherently a racial one. During one of my interviews with the People's Community Medics, I meet Sharina's 17-year-old daughter, Nikki. While we're talking about 911, there's a moment when Sharina turns to her and says,
"What you want me to tell the ambulance driver if something happens?"
"That I'm white and that I need help and that I'm in distress and I look like I got a lot of money."
Why would you want her to tell him that?
So, like, because they'll be fast, like they'll be in a hurry to get to where they gotta go. Because if you just sit there and be like, "Oh, African American was just shot" and stuff like that, they'll take like hours to get there.
Hit me. 911 is joking, yo town. Get up again, get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Get up again, get down.
We sent producers Seth Samuel and Alyssa Kapnick to see how other Oakland residents feel about their 911 system.
My name's Charles Rogers. I live in North Oakland. Shootings be going on in Oakland, and they don't respond as fast as they should.
Why do you think that is?
I think they be too busy, but I'm not sure. That's what they tell us when they get there, but I'm not sure.
My name is Coretha Scott. I'm from East Oakland. When you call Berkeley 911 police dispatch ambulance, they're coming like that. You probably won't even get off the phone good, and they'll be there. But out here in Oakland, no.
Do you think if you were white that they would come more quickly? Do you think that plays into it?
I think they can tell the area. If it's West Oakland, another killing, oh well, you know, they're dead.
I definitely think that it depends on what neighborhood you're in. My name is Lydia Moray, and I live in Rockridge in North Oakland. I think there's this sort of unspoken, well, am I going to save this person in North Oakland who's probably, like, really nice and contributes to society and this and that, or do I go to West Oakland again?
My name is Mercedes Gibson. I live in West Oakland neighborhood. I hear, like, gunshots and like that, you know, and no one ever comes. Poor people's lives and black people's lives and people of color's lives are just valued differently than white people who have money, I would say. Also, class is a part of it. It's painful to talk about.
So those Oakland residents echo what Sharina Thomas and Leslie Phillips say about 911, that it's slower in responding to their neighborhoods, or as Sharina put it,
urban communities of color.
The thing is, few of us know what happens when we call 911 from anywhere. It turns out that the path of that call varies city to city, and it also depends on whether you call from a landline or a cell phone. So, as we take a closer look at the emergency response system in Oakland, we're going to trace the path of a 911 call from a cell phone, starting at the beginning. Now, whether you're in the flatlands of East Oakland or the wealthier neighborhoods of the Oakland Hills, reporter Allie Budner found that first, your call goes here.
This is CHP's giant call center in Vallejo. It's about 30 miles north of Oakland. CHP stands for California Highway Patrol. That's the agency that handles all of Oakland's 911 calls from cell phones. In fact, Oakland is the only large city in California to still depend on the CHP for this service.
911 emergency, where are you porting?
The first person you talk to is...
My name is Rick Rocha.
Or one of his colleagues.
I'm a CHP dispatcher.
Rick Rocha sits at a station with four computer screens, two keyboards, and two mice. He uses all of them to get information about you and your emergency.
And then I hit a button that sends that information immediately over to the radio, and from there, I am completely done with my particular part of the job.
When he says the radio, he means another dispatcher sitting across the room under a wall of colorful highway maps. She has a radio connection to other agencies, so if you're calling from the scene of a crime, like a shooting, then she'll transfer you to another dispatch center.
All right, Lindy, hold on just a second. Let me get you over to Oakland Police, okay? 1 minute.
And zoom, we go from Vallejo to the OPD Dispatch Center in East Oakland.
Oakland Police, Dispatcher 90.
Olivia Moy is one of the OPD dispatchers who picks up these calls.
How much time usually goes by in between calls that you get?
Depending on the day and the time, I would say maybe less than a minute.
When Olivia picks up, be prepared to answer a series of questions. And yeah, you may have already been asked the same questions earlier by Rick Rocha. Basically, that's to make sure that the details don't change or get lost in this big game of telephone.
That doesn't mean we're not sending the police out. It just means we need to know this information to tell the police officers to catch the suspects as they're running away so the police don't drive past them.
Now that Olivia has your information in the computer, she pushes a button and sends it to the other side of the room. To?
Willene Jones. I am a 911 dispatcher here. So I'm looking at the severity of the call, what type of call it is, the person who's involved, any guns, weapons, so on and so forth.
While Olivia talks to the callers, Wallene is talking to the officers out on the street. She's kind of like a director behind the scenes. She uses a series of codes to decide which calls take priority.
So sirens is code 3, no sirens is code 2, so they get that intel from me to turn them on, turn them off.
But these directions can change as emergencies unfold in real time. Wallene says callers often get impatient and frustrated with her as they wait for help.
They're being robbed, they're being shot at, they're walking in seeing something excessively devastating for them. You're sitting behind a desk asking all of these questions, and in their mind, I don't want to answer the questions, I just want to cop. And trying to get them to understand, my conversation with them doesn't stop the officers from driving.
Okay, so just to recap a bit, you've called 911, and the first person you talked to was Rick Rocha.
911 emergency, where are you porting?
Then you were transferred to another dispatcher at CHP, who sent you to Olivia Moy with the Oakland Police Department.
Okay, Andrew, I can't guarantee when we'll have an available officer, but we'll send someone out as soon as we can.
And then you were bounced across the room to Wallene Jones, who sent your information to a police officer on the street.
I'm saying to him, go lights and sirens.
Still with me? So that's four dispatchers so far. And if you told Olivia Moy that someone on the scene is hurt, then you'd already have been transferred to another dispatch center. This time, to the Oakland Fire Department in downtown Oakland.
Oakland Fire Department, what's the address of your emergency?
Firefighters are the designated first responders to any medical emergency. And of course, fires. They're all trained to be emergency medical technicians, or EMTs. And at least one member of each crew is a paramedic who has more advanced medical training. When your call reaches the fire department's dispatch center, you might talk to...
Communications dispatcher Terry Woodard.
Of course, among the calls for medical emergencies, some have nothing to do with violent crimes. Terry answers one from a school where a student is having an allergy attack from eating a cookie.
Okay, and now let me ask you this. Is he completely alert?
This call skipped OPD and came directly to the fire department.
Does he have difficulty breathing or swallowing?
Terry sends this information to a dispatcher across the room, who then sends it to the fire engine closest to the scene and to the next call center. Yes, there's another one. It's up at the Livermore Lab in the Oakland Hills, and they alert the ambulance paramedics.
So basically right now, just reassure him, let him know the help's on the way. Don't let him have anything to eat or drink right now, because that might make him sick.
The ambulance service is the only part of Oakland's 911 response that's privately run. It's provided by the company Paramedics Plus. By the time the ambulance is on its way, two more dispatchers have handled your call. So that's a total of 4 call centers and 8 dispatchers before it's all over. Depending on your emergency, a combination of police cars, fire trucks, and ambulances could all be dispatched to the same scene. Many things can complicate a call. If a caller doesn't speak English, they have to get an interpreter on the line. Cell reception might be bad. And then there are human errors, like typos or misunderstandings. All these things can translate into seconds or even minutes of delay.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. Because of generous support from listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, Australia, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. Now back to part one of The Race to an Emergency, a documentary produced by KALW Radio in San Francisco, hosted by Martina Castro.
Today we're taking a look at the 911 response system in Oakland through the eyes of the people who depend on it and those who work within it. You just heard about the web of dispatchers that your 911 call can go through. Reporter Ali Budner joins us now. Ali, your reporting revealed other issues at play, depending on where you are when you dial 911.
That's right. First off, more people are calling 911 in East and West Oakland. These are areas where average income is lower, and so people call 911 for general health problems. But it's also where violent crime is concentrated in the city, so that also leads to more 911 calls.
And when someone calls from an emergency that's also the scene of a crime, that changes how the response goes. It triggers a policy called staging. Tell us what that is.
Well, staging means that police have to arrive on the scene and declare it safe before medics can come and treat anyone who's wounded. The policy is designed to protect medics since they're unarmed.
So even if the medics get there first, they have to park around the corner and wait for the police to arrive.
Yep. And often those are the firefighters. They're the designated first responders to any medical emergency.
So let's continue tracing the path of a 911 call with you. After the web of dispatchers, Ali, you spent a day with an Oakland fire crew.
So today, big things that we have going on. We got to get some inspection.
This is Tracy Chin. She's the captain on duty at Station 17, right in the middle of Oakland, on High Street. They average 10 to 13 calls per 24-hour shift.
Now you are scheduled to go to.
I don't feel so well.
The thing I get immediately is that this little unit, made up of an EMT, a paramedic, an engineer, and a captain, is like a family for the 24 hours they're on shift together. And it's this camaraderie that really makes a difference when they respond to an emergency. When a call comes in, Tracy says,
first off, you're going to hear what's called a klaxon. And basically, it's a kind of like a bell that goes off.
As we're talking, sure enough, the klaxon goes off.
Is that a call?
Sometimes, yes.
What? All right, this one's ours. It's in our district, so we'll go to this. So that trip that you're going to take to the bathroom, forget it.
This is my utility bell. Don't laugh at it, okay?
Mine is cooler.
We arrive exactly 3 minutes after the call came into the fire station. There's nothing about this call that's dangerous enough to require staging, so they can approach the scene as soon as they arrive. Their patient is a 12-year-old African-American boy, and we find him standing in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant. He's shaking and crying, holding his hand near his throat. Oakland police are already on the scene. A man who seems to be the boy's dad stands a bit away from him.
Right here for the dad.
Tracy gathers information about what happened, while the rest of the crew tries to keep the boy comfortable and calm.
You on honor roll?
5 minutes after we get there, the ambulance medics arrive, and the fire crew catches them up on what's happening. Emergencies like this one are complicated because it's not clear what happened, and the various responders don't always agree on what should be done.
One of the police officers believes the boy's overreacting, but Tracy wants to make sure the patient is fully checked out.
Yeah, but I mean, you know how it goes. We gotta cover it.
Yeah.
Once the ambulance paramedics take over, we climb back into the fire engine, and another call comes in.
What's this for?
We don't know what the call's for until the engine is well on its way. That's because, as first responders, firefighters don't categorize calls into high or low priority. They just go. We end up at an apartment building in another neighborhood.
Tracy, got a pressure 80 over 27.
This scene is very different from the previous one. It involves an elderly woman who can barely move when we find her in bed.
92%, heart rate at 86.
This kind of contrast between emergencies is common for a fire crew and leaves little room for discriminating between calls. When I asked Tracy Chin whether it's possible for racial profiling to be an issue in her work, she says no.
Not on my end. I mean, you know, whenever there's a call for service, I mean, that's a call for service. Doesn't matter what it is.
But Tracy says it's important for the public to understand why they might have to wait for 911.
So, like, I'll take you over to the map. So this is where our station is, right here on High Street, okay? Right at Porter.
She says wait times really depend on how many emergencies are happening in the range of a given station. So in areas where there are more 911 calls, engines are often sent in from other neighborhoods to meet the demand.
So, I mean, you see the proximity of where that station would have to travel. It's a longer travel time.
And she says there's an added challenge. Often people in the midst of an emergency aren't gauging time accurately.
We can have, you know, statistics that show that we arrive on scene within 2 minutes, but people are like, what took you so long? And I don't want to discount anybody's feelings, just I think a lot of it has to do with education about how the system works. And
she's referring in large part to the staging policy, which is designed to keep firefighters and paramedics safe. Rob Thrower, the crew's engineer, has seen the need for staging firsthand.
You stage for our safety, because if one of us get hurt, it's going to be makes it even more difficult to try to, you know, help somebody.
But he understands why this policy is frustrating for people.
When you do stage, you don't want them to see you, you know, because typically we'll stage and I turn the lights off and just be off in the cut somewhere, you know, taking a look. You do not want them to, you know, you right there, come on, my man is down, hurry up, you know, and you're just like, oh, you know, what do? You know, people run up to the rig, hey, with a person, help us.
It's a troubling reality that responders sometimes have to hide from the people they're racing to help. It's an example of what Leslie Phillips and Sharina Thomas of the People's Community Medics say is so confusing and frustrating about 911. And at least in this case, it's frustrating for the responders, too.
That's reporter Ali Budner, and you're listening to The Race to an Emergency. I'm Martina Castro. So the scene Rob Thrower just described, of firefighters staging around the corner from an emergency. Well, Leslie Phillips from the People's Community Medics explains how this looks to the people who are there waiting for help.
When the people in the community see an ambulance sitting on the corner for 20 minutes and they're not responding to the person in need, then it does create some hostility and some anger because the people don't know that that's what the situation is.
Ali Budner joins me again in studio. Now, Ali, the role that police play in deciding when the scene is safe is another issue for the People's Community Medics.
Yes. Sharina Thomas, Leslie's partner, says that's because many people in her community have a difficult relationship with the police.
I think it's more of racial profiling. We are ready. If we are out together and it's five or more people of color, we already considered a gang. So just imagine what they consider people standing around somebody that's being shot. You know, they consider us as unsafe anyway. I think that there has to be a better way to determine if the scene is safe. I don't think that it should be solely up to the police.
But it is up to the police. And that means the response time to these 911 calls really depends on how fast the police get there.
So how long does it generally take OPD to get to the scene?
Well, in 2010, the department said their average was almost 15 minutes for top priority calls. But by 2012, the OPD had reduced its force by almost 200 officers. In 2013, an article published in the San Francisco Chronicle said that the average had actually gone up to around 17 minutes.
So if that's how long it takes for police to arrive, that means victims are waiting for medical attention for at least that long.
Yeah, and this is where the training from the People's Community Medics comes in.
Allie, you went to one of the first trainings they gave back in the spring of 2012. It was at an Occupy Oakland picnic. Take us back to that moment.
Come closer, everybody. Come on up here. Don't be shy. Don't be afraid. Come on up here.
Leslie takes control of a mic connected to a small makeshift PA system. It's set up in the middle of DeFremery Park in West Oakland. Leslie stands under an easy-up tent and scrawls out a few words with bullet points next to them on a big sheet of paper. They read, 1, do no harm. 2, call 911. 3, rescue position.
So usually we have some fake blood, but today we're kind of out of fake blood. So just use your imaginations, y'all. And we do have a little gunshot scenario.
Pow, pow!
Oh, a gun. Oh, my God. What happened?
She got shot.
Sharina pretends she's shooting a volunteer. The victim falls to the ground.
So what you would do in this case is you would look for the entry wound, which is usually a small spot, but the exit wound is a big spot where the blood will be. And so you want to apply pressure on both the entry and the exit wound.
By this time, a small crowd, maybe 10 people, has gathered to watch. A few are taking notes.
So you want to hold the blood in there, keep applying pressure. That's why we handed out these packets with the rubber gloves and the gauze. You can just use a plastic bag or anything that you can use to seal in the pressure and the blood, rather. But you want to stay there with the person applying pressure until 911 comes. And when they come, then they're going to take over. But you may just be saving somebody's life by doing that.
Leslie and Sharina have first aid certificates from Red Cross. They've done a few trainings, including wilderness first aid for the streets and some informal one-on-one training with a nurse they know. So their medical skills are still pretty basic.
We are not here to replace 911. We are here to add life to our people before 911 gets there.
Before 911 gets there, that's the key. Because even when help is on its way, sometimes it's not fast enough. So Leslie and Sharina prepare people for that reality by encouraging them to call 911 and teaching them how to jump in when they otherwise might have had to just stand by and wait.
That was reporter Allie Budner, and that's it for part one of Race to an Emergency, a documentary produced by KALW Radio in San Francisco. Next week, we'll bring you part two. Check out our website, radioproject.org, to get a podcast, download past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.